This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Neil Conan is on vacation. On May 1st, President Bush landed on the deck of the USS Abraham Lincoln to make a triumphant announcement.
My fellow Americans, major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
In the 2 months since that speech, some troops have returned from the theater of operations, but new units are replacing them. And many who originally thought the way home led through Baghdad are now finding it a much longer road indeed, as their deployments are extended indefinitely. For the families waiting for them at home in the U.S., this is a time of patience and uncertainty. As Americans adjust to the messy business of trying to rebuild a country, military families have to cope with a new set of concerns. Today we're talking about the stresses facing military families in this new phase of conflict. We especially want to hear from the families of service members currently deployed for Operation Enduring Freedom. How have the challenges shifted as time goes on? Were you prepared for this stage of conflict? How are you coping, and what are your biggest concerns? Join the conversation. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK, and our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now from her home in Duluth, Minnesota, is Heidi Leckel. Her husband, Eric, is captain of the 724th Engineers Battalion, which left for Iraq on May 10th. Thanks for being with us, Heidi.
Thanks.
I understand your husband's deployment could last up to 2 years. First of all, did you know that going in?
Yes, we did. The original order said 1 year up to 24 months.
Did you have any idea what that was going to mean in reality?
Yeah, I did. My husband was very good. He's a company commander out of the 724, out of Bravo Company. And he just has one of the companies in the unit. And he was, along with the other company commanders and the battalion commander, were very good at preparing us families for the fact that, you know, and the other people in the Wisconsin National Guard were very good, I think, at preparing us for the length of time.
How do they prepare you? What kinds of things do they tell you?
Basically, just, you know, my husband prepared me. I can just talk about my husband, I was going to hear a lot of rumors about him coming home and just basically whatever I see in black and white, which I've only seen that original order that says 1 year up to 24 months. So basically just that, and, you know, that they are an engineer battalion. They basically go in and do, you know, the reconstruction part, and they were fully aware that it was going to be a long road, basically.
How do the problems that you have to deal with change as time goes on?
Well, I run a family support group up here in Superior, Wisconsin, and the biggest challenges that face our families is basically we just take on the whole, you know, our whole living situation here while our husbands and family members are gone. You know, we take care of all the finances, the children, the house, plus jobs. I have two wives that come to my meeting that their husbands were self-employed, so not only do they work full-time, they're coming home and taking care of their husband's business as well. So there's a lot of, you know, anything that comes up, your husband or family member is 7,000 miles away, sitting in a desert in a country that has basically no form of government and, you know, trying to help rebuild that nation. You know, they have their own set of problems, so you basically just, whatever comes up, you have to learn how to deal with it and how to cope.
Do you find that you're paying a lot of attention to the news, or is it more disturbing to pay attention to the news? What do you and other families...
I don't myself really watch the news all that much because, you know, you hear about just those things that go wrong, basically, in the media. And it can really, we don't get a lot of contact with our family members. So I urge my family members to not really, to limit their news watching as much as possible because, you know, it just creates that fear, which we already all have. And, you know, really what I hear from my husband is just that, you know, and like I've seen through the war part and now this part, is if you think about the thousands of number of troops, the United States troops that are over in the theater, right now there's 140,000, you know, the amount of deaths really is pretty low, you know, if you compare the ratio. So I just keep the facts in my mind and base it that, you know, and then I just have a faith in God that, you know, my husband's going to be okay. And it's just that faith that gets all of us through, and then supporting each other.
How often do you hear from your husband, and how do you communicate with him?
Email and the telephone. That's one good news about this war, is that no other point in history have we had the communication coming out of a war front as we do now, thanks to cell phones and email capability. I just talked to my husband this morning for about a half hour, and I hear from him about once every 7 to 10 days, and then I get an email maybe once every couple of weeks. So that's pretty much how if I need something important, I call up the executive officer's wife, Major Lindeen. She'll get an email to him to tell my husband something, because he's the executive officer, so directly above my husband, or to Colonel Mitchie, who is the battalion commander, and then they will disseminate the information down if it's something important. So,
do you let him know what's hard, that things are hard for you, if they are, or do you just try and put up a brave front, or how much do you tell him about what's going on back at home?
Very little. My husband, being a company commander, he's got 140 soldiers in Bravo Company alone. There's 492 in the 724 Engineer Battalion. My husband's got himself to keep safe, and you know, the safety and well-being of his 140 soldiers in his company. So I really try not to distract his mind away from what he needs to do. Because really, what can he do for me here anyway? What good am I doing him by stealing his mental capacity that he needs to have to, you know, keep everybody, you know, himself and everybody around him safe? So I tell my family support group, my house could be falling down around my head, and I'm not going to tell my husband. I have plenty of people here, friends, family, lots of people here who I can call up and vent to about that stuff and get some actual help if I need it. My husband, you know, can't come home because my basement might be flooding or you know, something like that. So, you know, and that's pretty much what we do, is we try to be really positive for our soldiers when they call home.
I think we have a caller on the line now who may be in your husband's company. Let me see if I can get this call. Julie, Julie calling from Minnesota. Hi, Julie.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Yes, my son is with the 270th Armor, and he's with the Bravo Company. He's been there since, I think early February is when he got over to Kuwait, and then has been in Baghdad since the beginning of the war, and he's still there.
He's still in Baghdad?
Correct.
And how often are you able to communicate with him?
Not very often. He said he's written many letters. I've only received probably three, and I know the mail's real far behind, and he hasn't received a lot of stuff we've sent. Although the packages that we have sent, he has received. I expect some of the mail may get lost in the shuffle also. And he has called me a few times. I have been able to speak with him probably for maybe up to 2 minutes. And that's always, you know, very nice to be able just to hear his voice.
Do you worry more as time goes on?
Yes, I do. I know that, and obviously he doesn't tell me a lot about it, and he doesn't really want to talk about the war, which I don't want to talk about either. I'd rather, you know, share more fun and exciting things with him and get his mind off of that for a few minutes that I can. But he, you know, says he's fine and everything, but I, you know, can't help but worry, because I know he's, you know, in Baghdad, somewhere close to the university where one service member was just killed the other day, and, you know, we hear this almost on a daily basis of injuries or deaths with our troops. So it's real hard, you know, to think about that and wonder, you know, if you'll make it through.
Yeah.
I just have to add something really quick. Julie's son is not with, she said, the 27th Armored Division. Our troops is the 724 Engineer Battalion, and I don't have an exact location where they are. I do know, though, that they are not in Baghdad. They're running their camp. I don't know who they're attached to, the 265th Engineer Group. I know that, so.
Okay. Well, I know he's been moved around a lot, but I know that his mail is going, you know, is addressed to that company.
To the 724?
No, it's just when on his mailing address, it's addressed Bravo Company,
yeah,
70th Armor, and I know that he is he was volunteered. He didn't go with his actual.
Yeah. Each group has their. I mean, each unit has like different companies, and they all have the same Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, or HHC.
Okay. All right. Well, thank. We may not be able to settle this at this moment, but I thank you so much for calling, Julie. And I want to just close out now with Heidi. Thank you very much for your call, Julie.
Thank you.
Heidi, I just, apropos of Julie's call, you mentioned that you work with your battalion's family support group. What are you telling people like Julie who believe that their loved ones may be in Baghdad, who hear about some of the random attacks that are being reported? How do you boost their morale?
Well, really, I'm just one, the 724, I'm one of, I think, 7 or 8 family support group leaders, and what we try to do in the battalion, what we try to do is work close together to keep ourselves up, and then when I hold meetings in Superior at the Armory 2 Wednesdays a month at 6 o'clock, the 2nd and 4th Wednesday of every month, and what I do there is I tell them I have the same fears, but I have every, basically you have to go on faith, you really do, that they're trained, they were extremely well trained when they hit Fort McCoy for that 55 days. They know what they're doing. My husband's been doing this for 16 years. I have faith that this unit, they're one of the best in the nation. I'm not just saying that because I'm a 724 wife. They are. They've been called up for humanitarian missions all over the world. They're highly respected. And the reason they get that reputation is they know how to do their job and how to keep themselves safe. And, you know, you're going to hear those reports, and I really feel for Julie calling from Minnesota about her son. I, too, that's why I limit my own news watching. I have those same fears, but basically I just say, you know, let's not imagine what could happen, the worst thing. Let's try to be positive. Otherwise, it's going to be a long year or more of us being here without our loved ones. And when they call, that just leads into us being, like Julie said, being positive and trying to get their mind off of what they're facing. And, you know, it just kind of helps everybody to just remain as positive as you can and pray.
What about public support, Heidi? Do you feel that public support is leveling off or waning a bit?
I do. I really do. You know, and we've been in a parade for the 4th of July in our community, and we're trying to get word out there so that when these guys come home, we can have one big welcome home party for them. Regardless of what you may, what your opinion might be of why they're over there. It's not their fault. You know, they were called up to do a job. I have every belief in the world that they're making this world a safer place for my child and my future grandchildren. I believe in everything they're doing. And the fact that, you know, people sit back and they're lazy boy and they watch the news and they think, oh, well, the war is over. You know, what could they be doing? And, you know, yeah, they're trying to do humanitarian missions. They're trying to help rebuild a nation that's lived under a dictator for, you know, a lot of years. And they're getting attacked by doing that. So, you know, it's still a combat zone. It will be for a long time to come. So if you have people in your community, I don't care if they're in the reserve component, you know, the National Guard or the reserve, or if they're active duty, you know, and you know a family member who's got somebody who's serving, you know, just reach out to them. You know, put a yellow ribbon around your tree. Hang a sign in your yard that says you still support them, because, you know, they have a lot of work to do, and it's still very dangerous. The reconstruction period of a country, I believe, is more dangerous than an actual war sometimes.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us today, Heidi. Heidi Leckel is the wife of an Army Reserve captain with the 724 Engineer Battalion in Superior, Wisconsin. She's the organizer of the battalion's family support group. We'll continue our discussion on the stress facing military families when we return. The number's 800-989-TALK. Send us an email address at totn@npr.org. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. We're talking today about how long deployments and ongoing risks are affecting the families of those stationed in Iraq. You're invited to join the discussion. Give us a call at 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now in Studio 3A to talk about what the families of deployed service members are dealing with throughout the country is Joyce Razor. She's the Director of Government Relations for the National Military Families Association. Thanks for being with us today, Joyce.
You're welcome. I'm glad to be here.
You know, at a certain point in this war, it looked like the troops might not be away too long. And as we said earlier, the troops themselves often said the road home goes through Baghdad. But now many are finding that Baghdad is becoming a temporary home. What are you hearing from the families who are waiting for their loved ones to return? How are they coping in this changed atmosphere?
I think a lot of them are coping surprisingly well, given all the stress and the attention still on the situation there. But there are a lot who are getting tired because the war didn't come at a quiet time for our folks. Our folks have been under a lot of stress. Military members and their families have been under a lot of stress since 9/11 and even before. Been a lot of deployments in the 90s. They've continued. 9/11 made things worse. So this was just another added stressor for these folks.
Now, we just heard Heidi Leckel say that she feels that perhaps the public is losing some interest. Is that a concern you hear expressed?
It's a concern we hear, but surprisingly, we're not hearing that as much as we had feared we would. What we still hear from most families in most communities is that the communities are supporting them. Employers are, for the most part, supporting them. A lot of the focus still on what's good for the families. Radio shows, shows like this show that people are still interested in what's happening to the families.
I imagine that many families breathed a sigh of relief when they thought that the fighting was over. And now, of course, we're hearing of these very random, unpredictable attacks on a pretty regular basis. Are people really, what are people talking to you, telling you about their concerns with regard to this?
You got a good glimpse of what, got good picture of what we're hearing from the two callers. Folks who are saying, I'm not going to listen to the news because all I hear is the bad news, or people who have listened to the news and it is scary because of the unpredictability.
Yeah. So in the beginning, we were hearing about families being glued to the television set, wanting to maybe even get a glimpse of
right.
Their son or husband or daughter. Now they don't want to do that anymore.
Well, they're a little afraid to be, and they don't know where their service member is. So when you hear the report on the news that there's been an incident involving a service member in one part of Baghdad, and all you know is your service member's in Baghdad somewhere, that can make you very nervous.
Yeah. Interesting, the caller that we had earlier, there was some confusion about where her son was. And I'm wondering, are families having a hard time getting just basic information about their loved ones?
In some cases, yes. This job of keeping families informed should be happening through the command, through the what's called a rear detachment, military members who are back home, and then to the families, to the volunteers like Heidi. Some units make that work better than others. It sounds like Heidi's husband's unit has that down to a science. They know how to do it. Other units don't. Your caller, Julie, brought up an interesting problem that's arisen this time around, and that's parents. Parents aren't always a part of that official information chain, but they want that information. And so sometimes it's very hard for the units to understand who they need to communicate with, how they communicate with the parents who are scattered all over the country.
If you'd like to join our discussion, give us a call at 1-800-989-8255. And we're going to take a call now from Ed in St. Louis, Missouri. Hi, Ed.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. Go ahead.
I want to let you know that there's a fund in St. Louis, Missouri that's been put together by the unions called 10 for the Troops. We've been raising money to help families who need financial help because their husbands are serving overseas and they've not had the same salaries. So if there's any union family or someone who has a union member in their family that needs some financial help for emergency needs, they can call area code 314-535-9660, 314-535-9660, and the labor unions appreciate what our men and women are doing overseas, and we want to help their families while they're here.
All right. Thanks so much for your call, Ed.
You're very welcome.
Ed raises a point, and that is the financial problems that some families may be facing. What are they?
Well, the problems are probably most severe for some of the activated Guard and Reserve members. DOD statistics, the Department of Defense's statistics show that about a third of our Guard and Reserve members who are activated see a cut in pay when they come on military duty. So some of those folks are having some problems because they have pre-activation expenses at a different wage level. All families can experience some problems, however, if the service member is deployed and the service member was the one that used to provide child care so that the wife or the spouse could work or go to school. Now that spouse has more child care expenses. Maybe the service member fixed the car. Now the spouse has to pay someone to fix the car. So there are other expenses that come up with all families. Military families see some tax advantages when the service member is deployed, and there are special allowances like a family separation allowance that families get to help cover some of those additional expenses. But there can be some problems for some families in making that switch from having the service member at home to overseas.
We heard Heidi say earlier that she was well prepared for the fact that her husband might be in Iraq for a long time. What about the reservists? Do you think most of them were prepared for a long deployment?
I think some were and some weren't. I think the ones who had really read the handwriting on the wall, had seen the pace of deployment over the last decade, were better prepared. There are some that were called up this time that hadn't been called up before, didn't expect to be called up. For some of them, it was more difficult. But it has varied.
If you'd like to join our discussion on military families, the number is 1-800-989-8255, or you can send us an email at totn@npr.org. Let's go to Mark in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Hi, Mark.
Hello. I just want to actually take the opportunity to call on President George Bush to offer an apology to the men and women in uniform and to their families for calling on those who would oppose us in Operation Enduring Freedom to bring it on. I just thought that was utterly irresponsible and, frankly, a stupid comment to make.
All right. Thanks for your call, Mark. And maybe, Joyce, would that be a sentiment that you might hear from other families?
I actually haven't heard anything from families about that. Families aren't trying to be political right now. They're trying to just make sure the service member is safe and work the communications issues and just basically take care of things at home.
Yeah. Laura in St. Louis, Missouri. Hi, Laura.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I have a son that's in Karbala, Iraq, and he's with the 3rd Battalion, 7th Marine Lima Company.
Mm-hmm.
And I get to talk to him. He calls home about once a week or so and kind of catches up. And he's getting about one-third of our mail. So I feel really fortunate that I get to talk to him as often as I do.
And are you paying attention to the news as other people?
Yes, I do. And I go online a lot. There's a web page I found, www.defendamerica, and I go on it to just see if I see a picture of him or something. But I've come from a military family, and we've had somebody in the war almost every war that our country served. My father was in the Korean War, and where somebody had said they don't tell their husband, you know, any of the real stressful things going on here. That's what my father told us. You know, there's nothing he can do about it, and there's no sense in him getting his mind off of what he's doing there. He's there to do a job, and he needs to focus on that, and the rest of us are here, and I just tell Andrew that I'm waiting for him, that, you know, I don't want to tell him we're going on with our life, even though we are, but I want him to know that we're here supporting him and don't give him any bad news at all.
Have you found that your emotions have changed as the deployment continues, as the situation changes in Iraq?
Sometimes at first I was really calm about it. I was really surprised how calm I was. And then the last few weeks I've gotten a little more emotional about it, but it's usually right around that time I get message from Andrew. His commanding officer had sent a letter home to me, which I thought was really neat. And then there's a 1-800 number I found that talks exactly about his battalion and his Lima company, and I call that once a week, and it's updated pretty much, and it tells what they've been doing. Sometimes when Andrew calls me, he'll say, "Wow, Mom, you know everything I'm doing." So, for me, I feel really fortunate.
I was going to say, you sound pretty plugged in, Laura.
I really am, and it's, I just hope I see a picture of him, but, I hit my moments.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for your call, Laura.
Thank you.
I wonder, Joyce, she was saying that she talks to her son once a week, but is that common? Is that, or is it just totally unpredictable?
It's totally unpredictable, and that has been another one of the big issues, is matching families' expectations of an electronic war where you could have phones and email on a regular basis, and then the reality where some folks may have to drive for an hour to get to where they stand in line for another hour to make a two-minute phone call. We've had a lot of families who've had a hard time dealing with the expectation that's been unfulfilled. The expectation was the regular contact. That hasn't happened, and it's created a lot of stress for the families.
So it depends completely on where they are.
Where they are and what's going on. Yes. Sometimes it's how close they are to the folks at headquarters. Sometimes it's just what's going on in Baghdad during that particular time.
Yeah. What about the children of service members? Are there specific programs aimed at the children? It must be particularly hard for young kids.
It can be very hard for children who are aware of what's going on. The school age children, younger elementary, preschoolers. It's hard at a lot of different ages for different reasons. Teenagers sometimes get a lot more dumped on them. Somebody will say as they walk out the door, "I want you to take care of the family while I'm gone." Luckily, there are some good things that are happening. The military services through both their child development program and their youth services programs are expanding their support for military children. Installations are working with the school districts that educate military children, both DOD schools and all the civilian school districts, to set up special support groups, provide extra help for counselors in understanding the military lifestyle, providing help, just a place for parents to go and talk about what's going on.
What if a family is running into financial problems, a family with young children? Is there anything in place in that event?
There are. Each military service has a relief society. If the families go to their rear detachment command or to their military installation family center, they can be put in touch with the military relief society that can provide grants, loans, extra help to kind of work some of those issues.
We're discussing how military families are coping with the long deployment of their loved ones in Iraq. If you'd like to join our discussion, it's 800-989-8255. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's take a call now from Roland in California. Hi, Roland.
Good morning. I think part of the problem is with the morale. My friend's brother is with an artillery company over there. And what happened is he is not doing the job that he was originally trained to do. He's doing more of a security guard type of thing now. And I think he has nothing to look forward to, because I know that his expectations were, he was disappointed and he thought he would be leaving, and then he was told that he wouldn't be leaving, and it's like a never-ending thing of rumor after rumor and things like that that is bringing his and his company's morale down.
Joyce, or what are you hearing? I mean, we were talking before with the families. Do they report to their loved ones the problems they're having? But conversely, are they affected by if their morale is down among troops? Do they hear about that, and does that affect them as well?
I think it works both ways. That sometimes our families are venting to the service member. We hope more are working like our first hauler Heidi's group is doing, and kind of supporting each other and trying to deal with what can be done at home rather than put it on the service member who can't do anything about it.
I think that's a good idea.
I think some of the service members and the families are reacting to the unpredictability.
Right.
To the idea that somebody said we're going to go home on a certain date, and that's not happening. And that's one of the big things that's changed really since 9/11 for the military. There's a lot more unpredictability, and the best way to handle that is to be prepared for the unpredictable. As Heidi said, don't believe anything unless you see it in black and white.
All right. Thanks for your call. Let's see if we can get another call in. Brian in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Hi. Welcome to Talk the Nation.
Hello. How are you doing? Great show.
Thanks.
Two things. One thing I wanted to bring up is the fact that you're bringing up a kind of a the hidden military heroes that we never hear about, and that is the military family. I was in the Navy for 23 and a half years, and Rita, I don't know how I would have done it without my wife. Another thing I'd like to bring up, my son is a tanker. He just got out of school not too long ago in Fort Knox, Kentucky, and he is in Vilsack, Germany right now, but he will be leaving shortly to go over to Baghdad, and he is a tanker. And like the last caller mentioned, I'm worried that he won't be doing his own job when he gets there. He won't be in a tank where he's nice and safe. He's going to be out walking the street with a gun. And, you know, that worries me that we're sending more military over there and not people to build up the infrastructure, because that's quite likely is what is making a lot of people angry, is they're not we're not building their economy and their infrastructure up as quickly as they would like. And so now we have people that might have been on our side, but now they're going to take the other side because we're not fulfilling our part of the bargain.
Thanks for your call, Brian. And Heidi, Joyce, one of the things that that call just raised is the fact that people are still being sent over. And it's not just a matter of people being deployed for a long time, but they're about to go still. And I think a lot of people aren't aware of that.
And it is. That hit me full force the same week that the president went on the Lincoln. I was in Germany speaking to a conference of military spouses, and then visited a community in Germany where all of the soldiers had just left for Iraq. So those families were dealing with those emotions very freshly, because the war was supposed to be over and their soldiers were just leaving.
All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us today, Joyce.
You're welcome.
Joyce Razor is the Director of Government Relations for the National Military Family Association. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.